Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 21, Conversation between Manu and Karadama, text number 31. Kritva dayam chajiveshu, dattva cha bhoyam atmavan, moyatmanam saha jagad. Trakshasyatmani chapimam. Kritva dayam chajiveshu. Tatva chabhyayam atmavan. Mayi atmanam saha jagad. Trakshasyatmani chapyaham. Kritva, having shown, dayam, compassion, cha, and jiveshu, toward living beings, tattva, having given, cha, and abhayam, assurance of safety, atmavan, Self-realized. Mayi. In me. Atmanam. Yourself. Sahajagat. Along with the universe. Trakshasi. You will perceive. Atmani. In yourself. Cha. And. Api. Also. Mam. Me. Showing compassion to all living entities, you will attain self-realization. Giving assurance of safety to all, you will perceive your own self, as well as all the universes in me and myself in you. The simple process of self-realization for every living entity is described here. The first principle to be understood is that this world is a product of the Supreme Will. There is an identity of this world with the Supreme Lord. This identity is accepted in a misconceived way by the impersonalists. They say that the Supreme Absolute Truth, transforming himself into the universe, loses his separate existence. Thus they accept the world and everything in it to be the Lord. That is pantheism, wherein everything is considered to be the Lord. This is the view of the impersonalist. But those who are personal devotees of the Lord take everything to be the property of the Supreme Lord. Everything, whatever we see, is the manifestation of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, everything should be engaged in the service of the Lord. This is oneness. The difference between the impersonalist and the personalist is that the impersonalist does not accept the separate existence of the Lord, but the personalist accepts the Lord. He understands that although he distributes himself in so many ways, he has his separate personal existence. Ekadesha stitas chag ekadesha stitas. Is it Jotir, Jotsnir, Jotsnir Vista Ratini Yata? Papa quotes that verse. How the fire is situated in the fireplace. Right? The fire is situated in the fireplace, but its presence is felt all throughout the room by the expansion of heat and light. This is described in Bhagavad Gita. I am spread all over the universe in my impersonal form. Everything is resting on me, but I am not present. There is a nice example regarding the sun and the sunshine. The sun by its sunshine is spread all over the universe and all the planets rest on the sunshine. But all the planets are different from the sun planet. One cannot say that because the planets are resting on the sunshine, these planets are also the sun. Similarly, the impersonal or pantheistic view that everything is God is not a very intelligent proposal. The real position, as explained by the Lord himself, is that although nothing can exist without him, it is not a fact that everything is him. He is different from everything. So here also the Lord says, you will see everything in the world to be non-different from me. This means that everything should be considered a product of the Lord's energy, and therefore everything should be employed in the service of the Lord. One's energy should be utilized for one's self-interest. That is the perfection of the energy. This energy can be utilized for real self-interest if one is compassionate. Kritva doyam chajiveshu. Right? At the beginning. Showing compassionate towards others. Doyam chajiveshu. A person in Krishna consciousness, a devotee of the Lord, is always compassionate. He is not satisfied that only he himself is a devotee, but he tries to distribute the knowledge of devotional service to everyone. There are many devotees of the Lord who face many risks in distributing the devotional service of the Lord to people in general. This should be done. It is also said that a person who goes to the temple of the Lord and worships with great devotion, but who does not show sympathy to people in general or show respect to other devotees, is considered to be a third-class devotee. The second-class devotee is he who is merciful. And compassionate to the fallen soul. The second-class devotee is always cognizant of his position as an eternal servant of the Lord. He therefore makes friendships with devotees of the Lord, acts compassionately toward the general public in teaching them devotional service, and refuses to cooperate or associate with non-devotees. As long as one is not compassionate to people in general in his devotional service of the Lord, he is a third-class devotee. The first-class devotee gives assurance to every living being that there is no fear of this material existence. Let us live in Krishna consciousness and conquer the nescience of material existence. It is indicated here that Kardama Muni was directed by the Lord to be very compassionate and liberal in his household life and to give assurance to the people in his renounced life. A sannyasi, one in the renounced order of life, is meant to give enlightenment to the people. He should travel, going from home to home to enlighten. The householder, by the spell of Maya, becomes absorbed in family affairs and forgets his relationship with Krishna. If he dies in forgetfulness like the cats and dogs, then his life is spoiled. It is the duty of a sannyasi, therefore, to go and awaken the forgetful souls with enlightenment of their eternal relationship with the Lord and to engage them in devotional service. The devotee should show mercy to the fallen souls and also give them the assurance of fearlessness. As soon as one becomes a devotee of the Lord, he is convinced that he is protected by the Lord. Fear itself is afraid of the Lord, therefore, what is he to do with fearfulness? To award fearlessness to the common man is the greatest act of charity. A sannyasi, or one who is in the renounced order of life, should wander from door to door, from village to village, from town to town, and from country to country, all over the world, as far as he is able to travel, and enlighten the householders about Krishna consciousness. A person who is a householder but is initiated by a sannyasi has the duty to spread Krishna consciousness at home as far as possible. He should call his friends and neighbours to his house and hold classes in Krishna consciousness. Holding a class means chanting the holy name of Krishna and speaking from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. There are immense literatures for spreading Krishna consciousness, and it is the duty of each and every householder to learn about Krishna from his sannyasi spiritual master. There is a division of labour in the Lord's service. The householder's duty is to earn money, because a sannyasi is not supposed to earn money, but is completely dependent on the householder. The householder should earn money by business or by profession, and spend at least 50% of his income to spread Krishna consciousness. 25% he can spend for his family, and 25% he should save to meet emergencies. This example was shown by Rupa Goswami, so devotees should follow it. Actually, to be one with the Supreme Lord means to be one with the interest of the Lord. Becoming one with the Supreme Lord does not imply becoming as great as the Supreme Lord. It is impossible. The part is never equal to the whole. The living entity is always a minute part. Therefore, his oneness with the Lord is that he is interested in the one interest of the Lord. The Lord wants every living entity to always think about him, to be his devotee and always worship him. This is clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita, Man Mana Bhava Man Bhaktaha. Krishna wants everyone always to think of him. Everyone should always offer obeisances to Krishna. This is the will of the Supreme Lord, and devotees should try to fulfill his desire. Since the Lord is unlimited, his desire is also unlimited. There is no stoppage. And therefore the service of the devotee is also unlimited. In the transcendental world, there is unlimited competition between the Lord and the servitor. The Lord wants to fulfill his desires unlimitedly, and the devotee also serves him to fulfill his unlimited desires. There is an unlimited oneness of interest between the Lord and his devotee. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Yunanjana Salakaya Chakchurun Militam Dena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Bukkam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Ganim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinataranam.
So, first point here is
that this world is a product of the supreme will. I listened to a nice example that Srila Prabhupada gave yesterday. A cloud is produced by the sun. So the cloud is an expansion or a manifestation of the sun's energy. And the cloud can cover the presence of the sun. Right? And so by the sun's energy or by the sun's potency, the sun can remain hidden. So similarly, the material energy is a product of Krishna's energy, or it is an expansion of Krishna's energy. And the material energy is able to, by Krishna's potency, cover or prohibit the living entities from seeing Krishna. It's his energy, and by his empowering the material energy, gunamayi mama darajaya, very difficult to overcome the power of the material energy. So by the power invested by Krishna in the material energy, Krishna remains hidden from those who are under the influence, who have chosen to be under the influence of the material energy. Right? That doesn't mean that he's not there. He's just not seen or perceived by those enamored or by those covered by the influence or by the potency of the material energy. But one who takes shelter of Krishna and who surrenders to Krishna, and by dint of their devotional service, is able to see the connection between the material energy and the Lord, they're able to perceive Krishna's presence behind or within the material energy. Prabhupada mentions here that the impersonalists see the material energy and God as if one. Here Prabhupada says here, this identity. So, there is an identity of this world with the Supreme Lord. The energy belongs to Krishna. It's his energy. We have been given an opportunity to utilize it. We're supposed to remember who it belongs to. Isavasyam midam sarvam yatkincha jagatam jagat tena chakchena bunjita magridha kasya sviddhanam. Everything animate or inanimate within the creation is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. And everybody should, we can accept our quota. Each one of us has been provided a quota. But we should accept that quota, knowing well to whom it ultimately belongs and what is allowed for our own purposes, right? And not encroach upon the property of others, knowing well that ultimately it all belongs to Krishna. Krishna is providing facility for all of us. So the impersonalists misconceive this. They say that the Supreme Absolute Truth transforms himself into the universe and then loses his separate identity. Right? He's one with it and is merged all throughout. No, this is the idea. But the devotees, the personalists say, well, yes, that's true, but he still maintains his separate identity. He still maintains his individuality. So we have the Brahman conception where he spread throughout everything, but we also have the Paramatma feature. The Lord in his localized aspect as a super soul situated within everybody's heart. And we also have the Bhagavan aspect, the source of everything. And Prabhupada gives the example here of the sun and the sun's rays, and also the example I mentioned previously about the fire and the fire being present all throughout the room in the form of the heat and light, but still remains in the fireplace. So the heat and light are manifestations of the fire's energy or the sun's energy. And as Prabhupada points out, you know, we can say, oh, look, the sun is in the room when the sun shines in. Right? The sun is in the room, but that doesn't mean that the sun globe is in the room. But the expansion of the sun in the form of its energy is in the room. So similarly also, Krishna is present within everything in the form of his energy, but that doesn't mean the energy is him personally. It's an important point. It's separated. Just like we're separated parts of Krishna, so the material energy is also a separated, what is it? It's all bina bina prakriti ashtada, separated from him. So Krishna says, everything rests within me, but I am not within everything. For the materialists, for the devotees, however, it's another matter. The devotees understand by dint of their devotional service, and they're able to perceive Krishna's presence within everything. And they recognize, yes, Krishna's here in the form of his energy. Prabhupada gives an example. You know, when you look at the shoe rack, right, and you see Sukadev's shoes, right? So when we see Sukadev's shoes, then we immediately think of Sukadev, right? Anybody recognize Sukadev's shoes? Yeah? Yeah. So when I see Sukadev's shoes, I say, oh, there's Sukadev, right? So when a devotee sees Krishna's energy, they say, oh, look, Krishna's here, right? So, you know, Sukadev's not his shoes, actually, right? But we know that Sukadev's there. He must be nearby somewhere because his shoes are there. So there's an example that a devotee, and Krishna explains nicely in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita just how we can see him present within the whole creation, right? I am the heat and light of fire, the ability in man, so many, the taste in water. How does that start? What's the... Yeah, rasoham apsakut. But there's a number of statements whereby Krishna mentions how the wind. Does he mention that? The wind? I purify as I am the wind. But that's later. That's in the tenth. That's the opulence of the absolute. So there are in the seventh chapter and in the tenth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives us hints on how we can perceive his presence within everything. Right? So in this way, and And Krishna reveals these things to the devotees by dint of their devotional service. You know, by dint of devotional service, we understand that we're not the body, that we're the eternal spirit soul, the part and parcel of Krishna. Mamai vamsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. That we're eternal. We're eternal. Na jayate mriyate bhakata chin. There's no birth or death for the spirit soul. What? By dint of our devotional service, we're able to see Krishna's presence within everything, and we're able to recognize our own identity within everything and in relationship with Krishna. I was meditating on this last night. This was Rupa Goswami's questioning of Lord Chaitanya. And he was saying, you know, who am I? Who am I? Why am I suffering? People call me a learned man. Was it Sanatana Goswami or I think Rupa Goswami? And he's saying, if I'm such a learned man, then how come I don't know who I am and why I'm suffering? Huh? These are questions we should be asking. Who am I? You know, this body is changing, and in due course of time, it's going to be destroyed. Previously, I didn't have this body. I was somewhere else. So who am I? And if I don't know who I am, then what kind of a person am I anyway? What's the value of me being somebody who doesn't or thinks that I'm something that I'm not? Right, this is ignorance, isn't it? We're basically in a state of ignorance. How embarrassing. We walk around the place thinking we know everything, but actually we don't know who we are. Right? Because if we think we're this body or this mind or whatever, it's going to be gone. And this is a bit of a shock, really, when you think about it, because we walk around thinking, you know, I'm an Australian, I love my country. But then we're not an Australian, we're not Indian, we're not whatever, German, right? Or mixed up. Sometimes we're mixed up. We can't work out what we are, right? So this is real ignorance. It's embarrassing that we don't know who we are. Yet, Krishna very kindly sends the devotees and the process of devotional service, the practice of devotional service, for us to understand who we are. This is the science of self-realization. To understand who we are. First thing is to understand who Krishna is and what our relationship is with Krishna. Jivera Swarupoi Nityara Krishna Das. We're eternally a servant of Krishna. But how we're meant to serve, the process of service, the details of servitorship are yet to be revealed. Or if we're following the process of devotional service, they're gradually being revealed to us. This is one of the things I was thinking last night. I don't really know who I am. If I think I'm this body, I'm in illusion because it'll be gone in a few years' time. and I didn't have it before, so then who am I? Yikes. So the basis is, you know, I'm a servant. And I'm a servant of Krishna. And one who teaches us that is the most magnanimous, the most merciful, the most kind. Prabhupada mentions that here. So, by practice of devotional service, by practicing devotional service, we should be cultivating or developing an understanding of our relationship with Krishna. And in the beginning, that means understanding ultimately everything belongs to the Lord, and that everything should be used in the Lord's service. And so we should understand what the Lord's service is, and we do that by sadhu, shastra and guru. The shastra teaches us the principles. The sadhus and the guru teach us how to apply those principles according to time, place and circumstance. The details, in other words. The absolute principles always remain the same. The details may differ. The Kanishta Adhikaris will fight to the death over the details. Right? But those who are more advanced will understand that according to different circumstances, different people, the details may differ so long as the principles are being adhered to. So we learn the process of devotional service, or we find the principles in the Shastra, although mind you, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see the principles being put into practice, especially in the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, the principles in practice for those who are part of the Sankirtan movement of Mahaprabhu. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the basic principles of devotional service as exemplified by the great, by the Mahajans, the great devotee, and in this case, Kardama Muni. So Kardama Muni, he is being, you know, his future is being described here by Manu. Is that right? Conversation between Manu and Kardama. Lord Vishnu? Still talking to Lord Vishnu. Okay. Yes, the Lord. So, we learn the details or the practice of devotional service by studying the scripture. That's why we study the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Nectar Devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita, primarily, Prabhupada says. These are our four books. If we study those four books thoroughly, Prabhupada says, you can be Krishna conscious. Right? That's all you need. We don't need any more than that. And we learn to apply the principles that we learn from the books by associating with the devotees. By taking guidance from Krishna's representatives. Well, the devotee, the Lord is very merciful. He's within everything, but we can't see him. The devotees teach us how to see Krishna within everything. The process of devotional service. Evam eka evanu kampatam mahamma jnana jamtamaha nasyam yatma bhavasto jnana tipena basvata. Krishna says, out of compassion for them, I, dwelling within the heart, destroy the darkness of ignorance with the shining lamp of transcendental knowledge. And that's revealed to us by Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Pritipurvakam Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Krishna gives us the intelligence by which we can come to Him, so long as we're constantly engaged in devotional service. In other words, we'll learn in a variety of ways how to approach Krishna. And as we follow that process, Krishna will gradually reveal Himself. The first thing He'll do is reveal to us how much in ignorance we are. Right? Prabhupada says, you know, it's very good that you're seeing how much of a fool you are. That's good, because then at least you'll be humble. Right? So, you know, sometimes we need to be smacked down. We think, oh, what happened? Why me? I didn't do anything. Right? Because we're a little proud. But we need to be... And so, you know, humility is an ornament of knowledge, of wisdom, of understanding. Pride is not. Or certainly being proud of one's learning. Because the symptom of knowledge or of understanding is humility. So... To follow the process of devotional service and to be proud of one's position. Because, you know, sometimes we can think, oh, I'm a devotee. That makes, you know, manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhanam, right? Out of the, you know, the best, I'm one of the best of all men because I'm a devotee, right? Which is true, but we shouldn't be proud of that, especially if we look at our previous history. We can see, okay, a devotee now, but what were you before? Or even if you're a devotee now, what kind of a devotee are you? So, you know, this Kanishtha mentality, I remember when I first joined a temple, and I remember having a terrible attitude to the people who would visit the temple. Right? And I used to think, what are these karmis doing coming here? You know, why don't they? First of all, why don't they surrender to Krishna like me? Right? They come to the temple and it's so obvious that this is the right thing, the correct thing to do, but they're so stupid they don't. Right? And, you know, and all they do is come to the temple and make life tough for us. Because we've got to feed them and, you know, they make a mess, we've got to clean up afterwards. And, you know, why don't they just surrender straight away, like me? Because I did, you know, I wasn't able to appreciate it. Wasn't, you know, it was only a few months prior to that I was just like them. So I just saw all the visitors to the temple as bothersome. Right? In fact, you know, there was one devotee, I won't mention his name, but he used to stand at the front gate and tell people not to come. For the Sunday feast, you know, go away, we don't want you here. Go away. So, you know, this is there can be this kind of absurd pride in being the best devotee. Right? And we see it, as I mentioned before, you know, we see it in some devotees. They'll want to destroy every other devotee because they're not as good as them. Right? If you're not worshipping in the same way as me, then you're fit to be destroyed. You're an infidel. Right? And I'm actually benefiting you by killing you. That's a pretty, that is a Kanishtha Adhikari for sure. Right? Madhyama Adhikari is much, much more merciful. But, and Krishna says, we shouldn't disturb the minds of the ignorant, but encourage them in acts of devotion. Right? That way they make progress. Right? Not thinking, I'm the best devotee and you're not a very good devotee, therefore I'm going to kill you. Where's the benefit? Where's the benefit for you and where's the benefit for them? Not much. We're not going to make much progress with that kind of a mentality. So the Kanishtha Adhikari mentality, it needs to be put aside rapidly in order for one to be a useful devotee. Right? Otherwise you'll just be committing offences all the time to people. That's effectively what a Kanishtha does, if they're because of the pride. And you know, I think we're in the third canto, aren't we? There's Kapiladev's instructions later on that talk about this. You know, a devotional service influenced by the modes of material nature. Because we know devotional service is pure and transcendental, but it can be mishra, mixed. Right? Instead of being shuddha or pure, it can be mixed up with other things. We want to come to the shuddha, the pure platform. That requires knowledge, but essentially it requires humility. And that humility means, you know, respecting everybody. Not manadena. So not looking for respect for oneself, but being respectful to all others. This is a mood of the essential mood of a devotee, of a Vaishnava. Kanishtha Adhikari tends to be somewhat proud, but that's third class. The second class devotee is the preacher who respects everybody. He sees, at least through the eye of Shastra, that everybody's equal. The Uttama Adhikari thinks that everybody's a better devotee than he is. Right? This is a very, very advanced stage of devotional service. And as Prabhupada points out, and as he exemplified, the Uttama Adhikari acts on the Madhyam or second class. And you know, when we say second class, actually the Madhyam Adhikari is a very, very elevated position. Even the Kanishtha Adhikari, one who serves the deity and performs devotional service, this is a very elevated position, actually. You know, we laugh about it, but actually it's a very elevated position. Anybody who recognizes the supremacy of the Lord is to be respected, honored. What is it? Krishneti yasya giritam manasa driyeta. Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Instruction. Anybody who chants the name of Krishna should be respected. Huh? So, we benefit from the association of the Madhyam Bhaktas, those who preach, and those who are compassionate. And we should become a Madhyam Adhikari, Madhyam Bhakta, as quickly as possible. Basically because we'll get on better with each other. We'll be respectful and appreciative, rather than thinking, I'm the best devotee and all of you guys should recognize my good qualities. We should be appreciative of the good qualities of others, and okay, we may have some good qualities by the mercy of the devotees and the mercy of Krishna, but also you know, our focus should be on improving ourselves, not thinking that we're the best. That's a fault in and of itself. So we, when the devotional community is focused on improving themselves rather than improving others, right? I'm here to improve you. I'm here to give you some mercy, right? Okay, that may be true, but we give mercy as an agent of Krishna. Not that we ourselves are potent or powerful, but the only way that we can be potent or powerful is if we're connected to the supremely potent, properly connected to the supremely pure and potent. That means we're connected via the parampara to Krishna. And that power and potency is transferred through the transparent via medium. The person who presents Krishna as he is, who represents Krishna and the parampara, the disciplic succession, faithfully, without ulterior motive, but rather in a service attitude, in a service mood. So, to be a servant of the parampara, to be a servant of Krishna, is quite a it's no mean feat. It's not to be taken for granted. It's a great honor and a privilege, and it requires purity, purity of heart, purification. Purity that comes through purification, which comes through the practice of devotional service, which we learn from the devotees. They're our gurus. And the quicker we learn the process of devotional service to rise to the platform of a Madhyam Bhakta, the better. Then we'll have the right cooperative mood to work together. We'll have the right appreciative mood of others to help and to help them and elevate them in the appropriate ways. And we'll be fulfilling the mission, Krishna's mission, and Lord Chaitanya's mission, and ultimately Prabhupada's mission as the empowered representative of Lord Chaitanya within the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. We'll work cooperatively in such a way so that the preaching will be effective. Our mission will be successful. And that'll be the proper, Prabhupada talks about the energy. The energy is connected with Krishna. We've been given the energy to work with. The proper utilization of the energy is for real, Prabhupada says here, for real self-interest. So what's the real self-interest? To teach people that you're not the body. To teach people that you're a spirit soul. To teach people you don't die. So Prabhupada mentions here the sannyasi's service is to give fearlessness. Right? And what's the greatest fear? The greatest fear is I'm going to die. Right? But we're not going to die. So that's why preaching or teaching or the distribution of Krishna consciousness is considered to be the most valuable welfare work. Because, okay, we're not necessarily feeding people, clothing people, putting a roof over their heads or whatever, but we're teaching them who they really are. We're giving them a proper understanding of things. The other things will come automatically. Krishna is providing for everyone. So real welfare work means to distribute the knowledge of Krishna consciousness to everyone. This is why Prabhupada put so much emphasis on book distribution, on establishing temples where the lifestyle of Krishna consciousness could be demonstrated, and where we should be demonstrating the qualities of a devotee, the practice of devotional service, and the qualities of a devotee. Just like that story Chaitanya Leela mentioned the other day, of a girl who, Japanese girl who'd been coming to urban yoga for some time when she was here on a working holiday, I take it. Right? Yep. And so she'd gone back to Japan for how many months? Some time.
3 years.
Huh? Over a year.
For 2 years.
2 years, right? But on her holiday, she had a week's holiday, so have a guess where she came this week. To Melbourne. To go to urban yoga. And she said how much she just loves the prasadam. Loves the prasadam. So, that taste. I remember when I first started coming to the temple in Adelaide, and my wife and I would go to the temple and we'd do our service or whatever, and then we'd go home and we'd say, "Whoa, that was intense. Whew, that was really intense," because you're engaged basically 24 hours a day. If you're not careful, the Hare Krishna devotees will work you 24 hours a day. Huh? And Prabhupada says that here. Right? What does he say here? Always, everyone should always offer obeisances to Krishna. This is the will of the Supreme Lord, and devotees should try to fulfill his desire. Since the Lord is unlimited, his desire is also unlimited. There is no stoppage, and therefore the service of the devotee is also unlimited. So hang around with the devotees and they'll just keep giving you things to do. Huh? Have you noticed? If you haven't noticed, come and see me and I'll get you to do something. So we would go to the temple and then we would come home. We think, "Oh boy, I've got to go home. This is too intense." Right? And then we get home and say, "Whoo, that was intense." But then after a while we think, "Oh, I've got to go back to the temple. I just love doing service." Right? That taste, the taste of performing some devotional service for the pleasure of Krishna, you can't get that taste anywhere else in the creation. Right? It's to die for. And we probably will die as a result of the performance of devotional service. Right? Devotional service will kill you. But so will material service. Right? People think, Chinchuripa will often complain to me that devotees will come along and they'll see her work and they'll say, "Why are you working so hard at Chinchuripa? Huh? Why are you working so hard?" And she's thinking, "Well, you're working hard, right? You're now going off to work, right? You're working for the boss. So what's wrong with me working for Krishna? Huh? If it's okay for you to go and work for the boss, why can't I work hard for Krishna? It's good for you." So there's a taste in devotional service. Anandam buddhi vardhanam prativratam purnam amritas vardhanam. Right? It's the nectar for which we're always anxious. Right? In the performance of sankirtan. And so therefore, that's why Lord Chaitanya says, "Param bijayate Sri Krishna sankirtanam." Right? Even though it never ends and it's unlimited and so therefore very demanding, at the same time, by the performance of the Sankirtan Jagya, which means basically preaching and working cooperatively in ISKCON, it is very demanding. At the same time, it's our saviour, it's our liberation, it's our life. And so therefore, we don't mind the challenges. In fact, we like the challenges that come with the performance of devotional service. We don't begrudge or bemoan our fate that we are now a devotee and that we're engaged in devotional service, and that sometimes there are challenges or problems. Even if you're working for the boss, right? Are there problems? No, it's all easy. No, of course it's not. Who's got a job? Is it easy? Right? The boss always comes along and pats you on the head and says, what a good person you are. Never. Never. And all of your co-workers are friendly, always encouraging you and giving you support. Now they're all looking at the clock and thinking, oh, gee, when do I go home? Right? Whereas the devotee is thinking, oh, I haven't got enough time. I haven't got enough time to do my service. Whereas the karmis are thinking, oh boy, it's dragging on forever and ever. When's home time going to come? Right? This is what happens when you watch the clock as a karmic. So there's more in this purport, but I think we should finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Alia. That's good.
And I finished them.
Yep.
And I did. I felt so proud of myself.
Oh, proud. You weren't feeling proud, were you?
So is all five bad?
No. Good point. Excellent point. A devotee is proud of being Krishna's servant, but he still remains humble. You can be proud of being Krishna's representative, but one of the qualities of a devotee is humble. Too right. They fight over the flowers. It's deadly warfare in a paraphernalia room. Achintya Rupa told one of the devotees the other day not to bully the girls who are giving flowers, right? Who are dividing the flowers, because there are a few personalities whose names I won't mention, but all of the women know who they are, who bully the girls who bring the flowers in. So Achintya Rupa told one of the bullies, don't bully. And she started crying. Oh, I might as well not do this service. I'm only doing it for Krishna's pleasure. Right? So, you know, we used to sell paintings and candles in the 80s. And our backyard was full of cars. We had 12, 13 cars. Were you here then, Shadama? No. There was a competition between us to get to the candle factory first thing in the morning after breakfast, because then you get all the best colours and all the best shapes and stuff. And you'd usually pinch somebody else's if you could. Right. And I remember asking Bhavananda, I said, you know, we've come from the material world, but sometimes, and in the material world, you know, they say it's a dog-eat-dog world, right? I said, but sometimes amongst the devotees, it seems like it's a swan-eat-swan world. So there's sometimes a competition amongst the devotees. So we need to be careful about being proud of our service. Right? Because, you know, we'll think we're the best servant and everybody else should bow down to us and our desires. So a little bit tricky. You can be proud of your service and want to do the best, but it's got to be done in a spirit of cooperation with others and appreciation of the other's service. And so the interesting thing is that all of the gopis are thinking of, you know, let me bring Radharani to Krishna. But Radharani is thinking, let me bring the others to Krishna. Right? Because that's what Krishna wants, you know, to be with his devotees. So the service mood is deep. It runs very deep. And so while there can be pride in our service and pride in our position as a servant and appreciation of that, the good fortune that we've got, at the same time, that's got to be underwritten by that spirit of humility, which is real understanding of our insignificance. Right? That if we're a great servant, that's only because we're following the great devotees and ultimately the greatest personality, and that's Krishna. Yes.
So you made the expectation that only the devotees, if someone has surrendered to the spiritual master as the mercy of the master,
yes.
Then he has as well super soul in his heart.
First thing, well, they're a fool. So first of all, understand that you're dealing with deep ignorance. And so they don't even know what their heart is. Right? So, in most cases, give them another pakora. Right? But if the circumstances require it, then or you know, we're explaining something, we need to point out that generally speaking, we're not connecting with the super soul which is what listening to your heart really means. You know, what listening to your heart can mean a number of things. It could just be the mental babble that's going on, right? You know what I mean? The mental platform, which is what most people are listening to, right? It's called WIIFM. Have you heard that? WIIFM. What's in it for me? This is what they're listening to. The babble of the mind, contemplating, you know, what can I get for my sense gratification? So, now, we have to judge, is the person that I'm speaking to actually going to hear what I'm saying and understand it? Because if we're just listening to the incessant mental babble, that's not really our heart. It's just a reflection of what's going on externally most of the time and what's going on internally in terms of our material desires. It's a combination of the two. Right. And in the 64 items of devotional service, in the first 10, in the first 4, right, the first one is, or 5 or 6, the first one is to surrender to the Guru, right? Then the second one is inquire from the Guru, right? Then the next two are relevant. One should be prepared to give up things that he would ordinarily like to keep. Doesn't want to give up, right? And one has to be prepared to accept things that one doesn't want. Right? So, critical. Critical there. When the super soul is actually telling us, surrender to me, we say, no, I want to listen to my heart. Right? Which is just some mental babble or, you know, material desires, basically. Let me listen to... I want to listen to my material desires. Don't disturb me. Right? So, you know, surrender means the first two items of surrender is to accept that which is favourable and to reject that which is unfavourable. And so... And that may mean some, you know, some challenges. So we're encouraged not to listen to the heart as such, because it's in our conditioned state. It's very difficult for us to work out what is what, right? In our conditioned state, we don't know really what's good for us or what's bad for us. And so therefore, the Shastra tells us that we should surrender to a guru or to our gurus, right? Our Siksha guru or the Vatma Pradashika guru, the one who shows us the way, and follow their instructions. And be prepared to accept some things that you might not want. And to give up some things that you might want to keep. Right? Your heart may say to you, going down the pub on a Friday night is okay. But I want to follow my heart. So, that requires discipline. Who likes to be disciplined? Who wants to be told what to do? Nobody. I want to follow my heart. Huh? So anyway, it really does depend on a person. Right? And how receptive they are. And in some cases, you know, you can tell them these things, but they won't hear it. So it's just make friends and give them prasadam. An argument's not going to... A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Have you heard that? They probably have a German saying of a similar...
Yeah.
So how to deal with people like that? Yeah. Make friends. Follow your heart. Means do what you like. The Shastra says, don't do what you like. But we don't like that. Right? So that's why, you know, the Shastra is a set of guidelines. And you know, we can explain it to them. When you buy a computer, with a computer you get a manual. Right? These days it's a PDF on the hard drive. Right? It's a soft. But that document tells you how to use the computer. Right? So similarly, the Vedas are the manual that comes with the creation, with the universe. And it they teach you how to use it properly. So do you want to use the body, the material body that you've been given properly, or you just want to follow your own mental distractions? So what's the response? What do they then say?
When I say that, like, the scripture says that it's really old and it's not up to date. And maybe some mistakes with the translating or maybe the way it's presented. Like, how do we know that this is presented the right way?
Yeah,
I can only learn from this.
Okay, you can, right, you can tell them it's old, but that could mean that it's actually good. It's tried and tested. Just because it's old, does that mean that everything new is good? Right? Everything new is good. Everything old is bad. No, it's not. Actually, things that are tried and tested generally good. That's why the Bhagavad Gita has been so popular. You have to say to them, the Bhagavad Gita has been popular for thousands and thousands and thousands of years because it's so good. Not because it's out of date, because it's always in, it's always, what's the word?
Relevant,
current. It's the latest wherever you are at any time. Okay, what was the other one? What was the other one? The other argument, it's old. Oh, the translation.
Yeah,
translation.
It's not according to the right the circumstances that you now. When it was written, it was different time, different circumstances. Now it's even new circumstances.
Yeah, actually, but you can tell them, actually, it's not different circumstances. Birth, death, old age, or disease have been current for a long time. Time, right? So if you reckon it's not current, you're not reading the right book. Actually, but you know what? And also the translation, you've got to say to them, the response to, they say the translation's not right, you say, that's right. You have to be careful with whom you study to understand the book. It's a fact. And that's why we choose to follow Prabhupada, because he's a bona fide, authorized teacher. And you can say, you know, we can understand that he's authorized and potent because he's brought this old, so-called old. So we think old, you know, decrepit, right, worn out thing, because it's old. But you can tell them, Krishna's the oldest, and he still remains the youngest. Huh? So, when we associate with the real practitioners, then we discover the freshness, the spontaneous, the immediate relevance of the Bhagavad Gita when we learn it from the right source. You know what? Have you ever done sales?
Book distribution.
Book distribution is sales. Book distribution.
Yeah.
Very often you get a no.
Yeah.
Notice that? That's just part of sales. So what do? Give up? Too hard, going home. Yeah, Find the next customer. Sales is just all about finding the next customer. It might take a while to get there. But then eventually you'll come across somebody who says, oh, wow, I've been looking for this book. Huh? I remember selling full sets of Prabhupada's books. And I was talking, Vasudam, I'd spoken to him on the telephone, and then he came to the temple and I just opened up the brochure and I showed him the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he just said, oh, I've been looking for these all the time. I've got to buy them. I didn't have to sell it to him. He just said, yeah. Because it took me quite a few, you know, there were quite a few rejections before I got to him. So when you meet a real customer, then you know, whoa, yeah, this is it. But you might get a few reject, you know, oh, no, I'm going to follow my heart. Or, you know, insert here 5,000 other excuses why I'm not going to surrender to Krishna. Okay, thank you. Gunjaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai.